Sedano Show with you here at 710 ESPN. Clint Yates continues with us. What you need to know is brought to you by My Computer Career. Look, so the breaking news, we had it in the last segment. LeBron James is out against the Houston Rockets. Here are some numbers thus far for LeBron during the restart. He is shooting 48.9% from two-point land, which is well below his average. Only 22.7% from three-point land. Which is clearly well below his average as well. And his free throws also affected at 68.4. True shooting percentage, not good at under 50%, 49.8. And here's the more telling stat as to why he needs to sit, and maybe the groin really has been hurting him, Clinton, and it's why he is sitting out tonight against the Rockets. The Lakers are a minus 32 in 134 LeBron minutes thus far.
Wow. Well, that's something that, you know, that's a real thing. We talked about experimenting with the KCP minutes. We talked about, you know, what's potentially going wrong with Caruso. Sidebar, I think there is a bit of pressure, on Caruso because of that situation that happened with his sister's wedding. I'm not even joking about that in terms of the team and what they expected of him and how that's correlating to right now. Separately, though, there's a real thing that you're going to have to manage LeBron's minutes here. And that's a different challenge. And I don't think that that's something that Vogel and Kidd and, you know, Hollins from afar are incapable of. But I do think that that's a switch in what the strategy is here. You can't just turn LeBron loose in this playoffs. And I think that's what we figured out. If we take nothing else away from McMenamin's report, good job on that breaking news. I think it's that we're looking at, you know what? We might not just be able to let him out the garage and let him fly. We're going to have to figure this out. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you always have to manage him. He's always done that outside of the 1 year in Cleveland where he played the 82 games. You know what I mean? Like, he's always kind of managed himself, whether it was the early years in Cleveland, the years in Miami, or the years in Cleveland after that.
See, I whispered to Greg, load management.
Yeah, I'm sure Greg loves to hear that. Next, the PGA Championship is underway. Clinton Yates, obviously there's a number of guys that are favorites for this. I know there's a lot of Brooks Koepka talk, but there's always Tiger talk, always Eldrick talk, and I know that you are interested in Eldrick's attire today for the PGA Championship.
I'm watching it right now. Those of you who know me have probably seen Drip Drive on SportsCenter. Maybe you haven't, but you know that I talk about the clothes a lot, and it's a nice brisk morning in Northern California, which is excellent because we get the long sleeve outerwear from the PGA Tour affiliates, participants on the course, which is what I like. I like it when the guys dress up and get a little layering going. Tiger's got the crew neck sweater, cozy boy attire. I'm very much a fan of that. This is a good look out here on the PGA Championship. Tune in and see some of your greater fall weather outerwear, even though it's the middle of August.
Yeah. Scottie Scheffler, and Zach Johnson are your leaders right now at 4-under. They are on the back nine. Tony Finau and Jason Day are among a group at the moment that are in that same conversation. Brooks Koepka is two back along with Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose. I haven't seen – Tiger's 1-under par. So
Tiger's putting well. He's putting well. He's knocked a couple down. I've had this featured group on ESPN Plus for those of you who want to check that out. It's a pretty cool feature in general. And he's also got the no-show socks going for those of you who are concerned about the below-the-knee situation.
Well, there you go. Speaking of an update, the College Football Coaches Poll has come out. And you and I will talk about the Pac-12 Union in a moment. USC is ranked 17th. Now, do you feel that is merited or maybe perhaps a bit on reputation? I don't even like these preseason polls anyway, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on all of that.
Okay, so quickly, because I don't have this information offhand, when was the last time that USC was ranked in the preseason poll in the top 25, and what has been the frequency over the past 10 years?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty much every year.
Okay, because that's what I thought, because the point is they're all kind of on reputation, and they all kind of have been for a decade. Let's be real. You know what I'm saying? Like, this team has not been that relevant for a really long time, but I think it's kind of the same thing everybody thinks. Well, if USC gets it together with their athletes and a coach that has some idea of what he's doing, and maybe they don't have some political situation happening at their quarterback position, they could actually put it together and beat a bunch of teams in an otherwise weak conference. That's what everybody assumes. USC is going to be the one team that does that in the Pac-12 every year, and they kind of never do.
Right. They haven't really since Sam Darnold was there. They had that one Rose Bowl run.
Well, sure. That was the outlier.
That was the outlier. Really fun one. But basically, that's 1 year in like a decade. Yes, that it has happened. Yes. Lastly, Bruce Arians said this about his time with Tom Brady. Brady gets cussed out like everyone else, Clinton Yates. He is being treated like one of the guys.
So this is particularly funny because Bruce Arians is a guy that has spent a lot of time around black people. So I would like to think that the way Arians yells at football players is a little different than the average coach, and Brady might not be used to this delivery coming from so many years of Belichick being so understated in the way that he talks. This is just a scene in my mind that I wish I could recreate on a film. I wish Hard Knocks was there. I love the fact that it's LA, but I would love to see the interactions between Bruce, Mr. I'm the first football player in the history of Vitek that ever roomed with a black guy, and Tom Brady, who's still running around Tampa trying to give everybody COVID because he doesn't know how to stay in his own daggone lane.
Yeah. Bergman, go ahead. Do your thing. Bergman makes fun of the Astros every day, so this is part of what you need to know, and it is our punctuation to what you need to know. Go ahead, Bergman.
The amazing trio of George Springer, Jose Altuve, and Alex Bregman this season are hitting a combined 184. Combined 184 with a 677 OPS. Last night, two hits combined. Two hits over 13 at-bats. So, not really doing so well there for those three guys.
No. The Astros also gave up an inside-the-park home run last night, too, which was hilarious. Yeah. It's terrible.
All right, that's what you need to know. The segment is brought to you by our friends at Progressive Insurance, and all our guests like Clinton Yates appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So, Clinton, we were having this discussion. Dodger game was fun to watch yesterday. A little bit of a roller coaster, clearly, at the end of the game, and Kenley kind of had us all on the edge of our seats there, maybe more so than we had anticipated as we were watching the outcome of that game. They almost blew a 5-run lead at 7-2. But what we were having this discussion earlier, what is more exciting to you, the walk-off home run or the walk-off unassisted throw out at home plate from the outfield?
Okay, this is real situational, but I will tell you this. Last night was extremely exciting. Like, that throw, so there were a couple things about that play. Greg, I know we can chalk talk this. In any normal situation, that was kind of not a borderline go. But every once in a while in the bigs, you have a play that is my favorite type of brand of play in Major League Baseball because the quality of play is so high, which is it's going to take a big league throw to get this guy out, you know? And that's exactly what Taylor did. And the tag, by the way, was underrated in that situation. A little one-hander in which he got the hard hit on the hip, you know what I mean, which is effective for two reasons. Number one, Blue can hear that. So if there's any sort of blockage that you've got the sound on you. And number two, you just might knock a guy off of his route on the slide without having necessarily blocked the plate, which is illegal now. So that was a tremendous play on both ends. I really liked it. So I'm kind of a fielding nerd because that's just the kind of baseball fan I am. So I like the walk-off assist play, but it's really hard to top a homer with a nice flip and a nice pimp job and a nice stare down, which, by the way, Fernando Tatis Jr. did yesterday. It just wasn't of the walk-off variety. But if you haven't seen that clip, check that out. He looked good hitting the yam late night.
Well, and the dance he did in the dugout was fantastic.
That was funny, too. But the bat flip and the stare down is on the internet in GIF form, and it is grade A, to say the least.
Yeah. That Padres team is going to be really fun here in the next couple of years, I think.
Bro, the Padres are good right now. They led the league in runs going into the series.
No, they don't. They don't. They have a very good squad. And I was very impressed with what they did last year to even be near 500. But I'm saying, like, for years to come, they're going to be there competing with the Dodgers, like, because their farm system is fantastic, was and continues to be fantastic. And,
absolutely.
And just, man, those guys are really playing better than I thought they would at a quicker pace than I thought they would.
Well, Tommy Pham is a great player, too, who's sort of an underrated guy on that team. He used to hang around the Cardinals for a long time, went up and down for many years when people thought he should have been a big leaguer for a long time. There's a full story about that on ESPN.com if you want to check that out. And Machado is Machado. But, dude, Tatis, man, Tatis is the kind of player that I tell my non-baseball sports fans friends about.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, yo, just watch this dude do anything. Watch him tie his shoes and you will be excited, man. The guy brings an energy to the game that is so fantastic. I saw him play for the first time with my eyeballs in the Futures game when the All-Star game was in D.C. a couple years back. And I was like, yo, I could not stop looking at him, you know? And he's still that player now, translates to the big league level. So you're right, man. The pods are going to be around. Fear the fathers. I'm kind of here for it.
So let's talk big picture baseball here. You know, Dodgers included, obviously, if you'd like. What is the thing that you've seen from this season that stands out to you the most as the most odd, right? Like whether it's a team performing a certain way, maybe like the Padres like we just discussed, or a particular trend you're seeing with position players or pitchers or whatnot. What is standing out to you?
overall in baseball?
Yeah.
I think that this, I mean, and this is not exactly a cop-out, but this is going to be, I think, an interesting discussion. You know what it's been? And I asked this question on Twitter 2 days ago. It's been that, dude, the extra innings rule to me is massively better, and it's not close than before. Like, I don't know what I thought, and I don't necessarily consider myself a super conservative person when it comes to baseball, not by any stretch. I believe in the stealing first rule should be implemented immediately if you want to know what kind of thing I'm talking about. But, like, it's not that it makes the games faster. It just makes extra innings way better. And I'll take that trade-off when it comes to the things we're talking about to improve the game. There's a lot of different things that were up for debate in terms of what can we implement to make baseball better, and the time was always a number one concern. However, getting the extras and actually having some action, even if it doesn't necessarily shorten the game, it's been a drastically better experience for that part of the game, and I search for extras now. Your boy's out here watching box scores, looking for games that might go to a couple extra frames, and I'm serious because yeah. It's a totally different sort of mindset in terms of how you're attacking, you know, the plate and the batter, you know, from a battery standpoint. And like, guys are kind of different in terms of how they run the bags because it's not really the same risk because you didn't really have to earn it, but it still can get you something. Like, it's added a fun strategic element to baseball that I was not prepared was going to be so obvious to me on first sight.
I agree. I didn't love it at first, but now as I've seen it being implemented, it does add a level of intrigue. I don't think there's any question about that. And strategy, as you pointed out. The seven-inning games, we saw a doubleheader yesterday between the Marlins and the Orioles. The fascinating part about this is the Marlins are 5-1 and in first place against a Braves team that has played like 11 games or 12 games already this season. It's just such a weird season. But we saw seven-inning doubleheaders. Like, what do you make of that? Like, are you in on that?
I don't hate it. You know, for those of you who've, you know, covered college baseball or even high school baseball, you see that with some fair amount.
Yeah.
You know, you get the 7-inning guy and then the 9-inning guy or the 5 and the 7 at the high school level. So
right.
I'm not entirely unused to it, but it is a little strange because it's hard to program your brain to think about a Major League Baseball game in terms of like the man management and the pitching, you know, because it's such a different calculus for how you manage your arms in any particular situation. So that part of it is weird, but it doesn't like sort of naturally offend me to think, oh, my God, we're not going 9. You know, we're already trying to figure out international tiebreaker rules to get things moving in extras. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes that's because nothing is happening in the 8th and the 9th. The end of the game is the end of the game, so I don't mind.
All right, big picture, Rob Manfred. How do you think he's handled this? It feels like, I mean, Tim Kirkjian never besmirches anyone. And, you know, obviously this is degrees here because Tim Kirkjian would never do that anyway. But he was kind of like calling out Rob Manfred yesterday, like I would, you know what I mean, on a talk show.
Yeah.
Where he was like, yo, he's making this about himself. And this notion of he's not a quitter. Dude, you're not the one running out there. You know what I mean? Like, I'm with Tim Kirkjian on this. I am Team Kirkjian. But how do you feel about Manfred and his comments this past weekend to Carl Ravage?
I thought that they were bizarrely over the line for a guy who normally messes things up by not going far enough over the line to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his normal error is inaction. Or action that is really just superfluous, as opposed to saying something so bizarrely selfish, such as, I'm not a quitter. Like, that sounded oddly, I'll say campaign traily, for lack of a better term. It was like, bro, we're not voting for you. We're trying to keep the game healthy. That's what matters here. Our personal confidence in what you think about yourself is completely immaterial to the basic public health notion of trying to keep folks safe in order to play the game, in order for the people who hire you to make money. So they probably don't want to hear that it's about you either, because if you can't get through a season, well, you're jacking things up for them as well. My issues with Manfred are entirely separate and clear, alone previously to just how he's handled the COVID. So if you add this on, this is certainly not a good look, you know, in terms of compiling all of it. And I don't know, man. I understand how it's possible that this moment could have gotten bigger than a lot of people who otherwise considered themselves smart people. That is not an unacceptable concept in my mind. What is an unacceptable concept in my mind and is insulting to my intelligence is that we can't all figure this out together without somebody implementing some level of I told you so. Forget all that, man. The I told you so's are off the table. We know the bubbles work. We know that the situation with Major League Baseball was flawed from the rip. And we know that we could probably fix it if you just admitted this was the wrong first step. But that's hard for a lot of people to do, and that's why hubris is a thing.
There he is, Clinton Yates. Follow him on Twitter, at Clinton Yates. He joins us every Thursday. And are you coming with us to the afternoon?
Yeah, bruh.
Okay,
you know where,
man.
I'm at. That means that I can do these hits from the beach in the afternoon, which is even better for me.
All right, man. Stay healthy, stay safe. We'll talk soon.
See you.
All right, there he is, Clinton Yates with us here. All right, coming up next, we're going to put it into context. The Lakers' biggest struggles in the bubble. I'm going to give you some numbers that will kind of illustrate what's going on, plus the latest on LeBron next. We're back in 2.5 minutes. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Thanks to Clint Yates for hanging out with us there. What was that noise? Craig, did you burp on the air?
I was not on mute from the break. So, yes. Yes, I did. I'm going to go on mute now.
Laura, you need to get that whole exchange and clip that. That needs to be there forever. What are you drinking or eating?
I'm drinking coffee.
Who burps when they drink coffee?
I don't know, man. It just happened. And normally I'm on mute, so nobody ever hears any of this stuff, but I looked over and I had levels. So
I was like, wait a second, what is that sound?
It was a light one. It wasn't like some big
It was. That's why I didn't know exactly at first what the hell it was. And I'm like, what just happened there?
Oh boy. Mute time.
Yeah. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance, including Greg's belch. With more than 30 unique coverage options available, Progressive knows small business. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Ay, ay, ay. Anyway, Greg, you've had an interesting week here on the show.
I feel like I have an interesting day every day with you guys, so this is nothing new.
Yeah, it has been a unique week for you, I feel like, here.
I mean, the Ari thing was last week, wasn't it?
That was last week. But there was something yesterday. What did you do yesterday that we played back?
The liners. That he doesn't
know.
Liners.
You know what? Yeah. And actually, thinking about it, the liners, you guys went way too far on the liners.
No, we didn't.
Oh, yes, you did.
I still have the audio.
I mean, Ramona was so good on that yesterday.
It was very funny, but I didn't even bring up anything to do with any type of stats. I wasn't, like, dropping DP, whatever.
I mean, but you – come on. Are you really going to fight this? You're sitting there talking about Kyle Kuzma's perimeter defense on a liner to tease a Laker game?
No, I wasn't. I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying it wasn't.
Oh, right.
Deep.
Well, we clearly know that wasn't good. Yes.
The rest of them were fine. You didn't even notice most of the time.
The rest of them were fine. Yes, the rest of them were fine. I did allude to that. Speaking of the Lakers, so, Greg, here's a stat for you. If you really want to kind of surmise the Lakers' struggles in the bubble. And by the way, I am buying all the Lakers stock. Everyone seems to be selling Lakers stock. I am buying it because I just buy into LeBron James. I believe that LeBron James' greatest asset, as Clinton and I were talking about it earlier, and he astutely pointed out, is that, well, his greatest asset beyond being just awesome, is that he makes other guys good. Like, guys who wouldn't be necessarily good role players are really good role players with LeBron James. And man, that is an unbelievable skill to have when you look at the makeup of this particular team. And I know that Anthony Davis and I don't always agree when he says stuff to the media, but I will agree with him on this, where he said, better to have these shooting woes now, and they are some pretty bad shooting woes, which I'll get to in a second. I'll illustrate them for you in a minute. But better to have them now than when the actual playoffs are starting. So look, here's what I want to do. If you find and I'm going to steal this from the Lebatard Show, because they do this thing called the Parade of Gas Bags, where they get a they get like a montage of audio clips from the radio and TV from all the different opinionists from around the world of sports, and they take the worst takes, right? Like, it's basically like they grab their takes about, we'll use the Lakers as an example, right? All these people now, whether it's Skip Bayless or Colin Cowherd or, you know, Doug Gottlieb or Rob Parker or even people on our own network, you know, Jay Williams, right, sitting there saying, oh, Lakers, not buying the Lakers. They're not good enough. They're not going to win the West. They're even going to lose to the Portland Trail Blazers. I want you guys to have a homework assignment. I want you all to send me all those clips, that those video clips, the audio clips that are all over Twitter and Instagram. You can send them to my Instagram at George Sedano ESPN or at Jorge Sedano ESPN on Instagram, at Sedano, just my last name on Twitter. And I want you to tag me on all those, because I will have Laura and Greg and everyone make a montage at the end when the Lakers not only win the West, but then later on when they win the championship, and we will run them. Now, if they happen to lose along the way and we're wrong, then we just won't run it. And we'll just sit here and lament how it all happened. But it's very easy to take the field, is what I would say. That is the easy position. The harder position is to take the team in a bubble scenario that has some flaws, because every team has a flaw and isn't the best team on paper. I would say that is a bigger measure of, I don't know, being out on a limb, per se, and then taking the field, which is what everyone else seems to be doing. But anyhow, Greg, to the point I was trying to make, just to kind of surmise the Lakers' woes here in the bubble, and they've been bad. The Lakers' offense just had the worst offensive output of the entire season against Oklahoma City. But overall, in the bubble, the Lakers are putting up a mere 96.6 points per 100 possessions. To put that into context, the Warriors, who were dead last among 30 teams in offensive efficiency prior to the shutdown this season, averaged 104.4 points per 100 possession this season. So if there's anything that's going to be encouraging here, Greg, is that the Lakers can't actually be as bad as they've been thus far in the bubble, and they're playing far below what a really bad modern NBA offense looks like and will probably, is my guess, snap out of this sooner rather than later. So with LeBron sitting out tonight against the Rockets, as Dave McMiniman reported, I actually feel like it gives them a chance to kind of just take a breath and be like, all right, we will slowly but surely experiment and ramp this thing back up with LeBron. Give him a little rest today, let him rest his groin, and ramp him back up and get him ready for the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to regress to the mean, right? At some point, it's all going to go back to what it normally is. This is just a bad spot. And to the point of last night's game, they had 52 points in the first half, which is just terrible shooting. That's the lowest first half output they've ever put in a game this season. So it's you're seeing how bad their shooting has been. I mean, Danny Green cannot hit a shot to save his life. KCP No. is missing with regularity. Nobody can find the bottom of the net.
No one can find anything. It's been a really, really bad run. So we were asking people, if you want to chime in, 877-710-ESPN, what is your level of concern right now with the Lakers? We've had people ranging from like 8 to 0. We've had people said 0. Zero concern about the way things are going right now. So hit us up, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. We will get to your calls in a second. Don't forget, coming up in the next segment, we are going to give away a $100 gift card to NFLShop.com, and we'll qualify you for your chance to win a 55-inch screen TV, courtesy of our friends at Hard Knocks. So we'll have that for you in the next segment. So make sure you stick around for that. So, Greg, when you look at them, though, like, is there anything positive that you can take out of what you've seen from the Lakers thus far?
Yeah, when Anthony Davis is aggressive, he shows why he's one of the top five players in this league, and why him and LeBron work so well together. And the two of them working well together is just going to be great in the postseason, to the point where they're going to beat most teams because those two are so good and have such great chemistry.
Yeah. Look, I agree with that. I do think there's this. Like, what you saw yesterday, though, from Dion Waiters is kind of what you should expect. He took bad shots. He missed a layup with LeBron wide open on the wing. He decided, like, that's the Dion Waiters that I'm telling you will creep up on you. He'll hit the side of the backboard because he's taking ill-advised shots. And doing it with LeBron on the floor can't be good. Like, there's no way LeBron was happy about that. I'm sure he was having a flashback to, this is why I traded your ass from Cleveland in 2014.
It was just funny because you talked about Dion in our group text. And as soon as you said something negative about Dion, he went 5 for 7 the rest of the way and was one of the leading scorers for the team.
Greg, he stinks.
It's, look, what he does for this second team is still a positive. There's nobody on that second team that can break down a defense like he can and get to the cup. It's just, he's the only guy that can do it. And if he can find a way to hit open guys in the corner when he gets to the basket, then it changes the entire game for him. Whether he does
that
or not.
Do you trust him?
He still takes bad shots, especially from three. But in limited minutes in the playoffs on the second team, I'm okay with that. If he gets me 10
points. You want to play him in the playoffs?
Yes. Ugh. Nobody else can do that. He's instant offense.
Yeah.
He is instant offense off the bench. Ugh. Yes, he's going to get playing time. J.R. Smith has not done the damn thing. So of the two guys, okay. I want to see Dion Waiters more so than J.R. Smith.
I will not trust Dion Waiters, even over J.R. Smith, who has only had one decent game in the bubble thus far. KB is in L.A. KB.
How you guys doing?
Hey.
All right. Yeah, I have one little comment I want to make. You can't really take these games seriously because of the fact that they've been off for 4 months, and it's only been the fourth game since they've been back. And there's nothing like regular competition at that level versus a practice to really get your feet, you know, back into the motion of.
Sure. Oh, KB, hello. We lost him. No, but he did make a great point, KB. Thank you for the call. It sounds like you dropped there. But, you're right. That's why I'm still buying. I'm trying to scoop up all the Lakers stock because there's a lot of people out there just trying to sell right now, making excuses. Like, literally, I had an argument with somebody the other day, a media member. Not an argument, but a discussion about, like, Portland. I'm like, dude, the Lakers are going to beat Portland in 6 games. Like, yeah, okay, it would be harder than playing Memphis or the Pelicans or whatever, but it's still not going to be that close. Steve is in North Hollywood.
Hey, guys. You know, George, I'm concerned. I've been watching the Lakers. I've been watching the NBA for 50 years. I am seeing a team that not just looks out of sync, but hasn't adapted, as far as I'm concerned, well to the bubble. And, you know, shooting is a strange thing. You even heard guys talking about a pregame like Worthy when they were doing the pregame. They're in an environment where it's different depth, okay? They're seeing different things, and they're not shooting well at all. And, look, everybody's poo-pooing this Avery Bradley missing thing. He was their best perimeter defender, and he was the fourth best three-point shooter, and over the last couple months he was their best three-point shooter. And I can't – there is no good replacement for him. You're going to have to play KCP a lot. And to be honest, KCP was their best three-point shooter for the season. So these are the guys. There's no other guy. You know, people say don't play KCP. Don't play
– Right, there's not – either that or you're going to have to go with Dion Waiters or J.R. Smith.
Right.
Right.
No, yeah. Waiters is going to play. Waiters has to play. In fact, he's the only other guy on this team – other than LeBron, really, AD somewhat, that can consistently create his own shot. Now, he doesn't always take great shots, but these guys are going to play, and that is scary. And add in one more thing here. You know, they have yet to be cohesive defensively because losing Avery Bradley has changed, you know, everybody's position in the defense. And you're going to have somebody – look, we're going to go up against Portland – you can say, well, you know, Portland's not that great. Look, they were in the Western Conference Finals last year. They're playing great basketball now, and that matters. And somebody's got to cover Lillard. Somebody's got to cover McCollum. They're going to make it very difficult in the Lakers to do this where they're going to score 3 points coming down the court, and the Lakers are going to score 2. And that's going – I mean, this is the NBA. This is why Golden State's been so good. They can make threes. The Lakers right now – may be, of all the Western Conference playoff teams, they're probably going to be the worst three-point shooting team in the Western Conference. And that scares me. I mean, it really does. And I don't see help coming. I'm looking at JR and thinking, he looks kind of old, and he's not doing the defensive rotations well. I mean, this is a concern. I don't want to poo-poo it. And if they get by Portland, it's not going to get any easier. They're going to end up with another good team, and then they're going to end up with the Clippers or, I don't know, the Rockets or – it's going to be hard.
But listen, you know, Steve, the playoffs are always hard. You know what I mean? Like it's a series of adjustments from game to game. Like there's never like I don't know, man. Like I agree, but
let's look at it this way. When you start looking at the Lakers, just you know, after the two great players, right after LeBron and AD, you're like. Everybody else feels interchangeable, right? Sometimes Kuz is good, and sometimes, well, one of those guys who was more consistently good at the end was Avery Bradley, and he's gone. So I know we're literally praying that, you know, people wanted Caruso so bad. I have a Facebook page, a Laker page, and everybody's Caruso. This just means more Caruso. I'm like, we don't know what we're going to get with more Caruso. He was playing 17 minutes a game.
Right,
now
right. The increase doesn't
or 30.
An increase doesn't always mean better play.
No,
right.
It's something right. Diminishing returns a lot. You know, you force a guy to get. He's more tired. There's a little less energy, and the things he does well, getting his hands on loose balls, right, making things difficult for defenders. All that stuff is not going to be. He's going to be a little more tired.
Well, to your point, Steve, and thank you for the call. To your point, there's a reason that the Clippers only play Ivica Zubac 17 minutes a game. And he's good for those 17 minutes that he's out there. There are guys that play a role for a reason. And Caruso's really good with LeBron. But when he's not playing with LeBron, he's not as good. And in a more expanded role, he's going to have to play more minutes without LeBron. So I think that's part of the equation too. PJ's in LA. What's up, PJ?
Hey, guys. How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call. I want to back up the previous caller that just called in. Listen, I've been a Lakers fan for a long time, and I've been watching Lakers. You know, quite frankly, they're a strong team. I get it. But I feel like if they face the teams from the East going into the playoffs, I feel like we're going to have a tough chance of actually making it all the way when we have Portland and we have, you know, just Bucks and all the other teams that are in the East Coast. I just don't think that Lakers will get it this season. Watching the last, you know, couple games that they lost in the bubble, it's tough.
PJ, I understand your concern and I appreciate it. And you stay healthy and stay safe. And Steve as well earlier, stay healthy and stay safe. I'm not going to overreact to what in essence would be if we were equating this to the regular season. And I know it's not the same, and I know LeBron has even referenced it, that it's not the same and that this is unique and the circumstances are completely different than anything they've ever dealt with. I get that. But this would be no different than a rough patch in the regular season. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the end. They still have games, by the way, to kind of figure it out. Get guys healthy, get guys' minds right. Like, it's why I'm not selling any stock. Like, I get it, it's concerning. I'm illustrating that, and I'm agreeing with that. However, I do think that you can't necessarily take regular season results and extrapolate that and make it feel like it's going to factor into the way the postseason is. Because just even the level of scouting from game to game is so much different in the regular season than the playoffs. And even despite the bubble, I get that. It's different. I understand that. Put that aside for a second. But just the level of scouting, the level of preparation, the level of adjustments, everything is ramped up so many times when we're talking about the playoffs. Jason is in Downey. What's up, Jason?
Oh, hey. Like always, I definitely agree with you. I think tonight's game is actually going to be pretty fun, where LeBron will not have the ball at all, so Vogel's probably just going to give everyone the green light. Go ahead and let's see who's going to make this rotation, who's not. The only concern I would have is actually who the Lakers are going to play. You know, we're all watching Portland. We're all seeing Skinny Melo come out and ball, and it's just, I'm not going to lie, my concern level facing them is about an 8 or 9 compared to if it was Memphis. Or
oh, of course. Of course. They're a real team. They've got a killer in Damian Lillard. You know what I'm saying? Like, and look, you pointed out about Melo. Melo is, when given the open looks, and he's got plenty of open looks. And here's the thing about Melo, and thank you for the call, Jason. Stay healthy, stay safe. Melo is taking the least amount of shots he's taken his entire career. And he's nailing big shots in big moments because he's wide open. And he has relished the opportunity to be in a role. And CJ and Dame are going to get shots. Nurkic is going to create mismatches. But at the end of the day, for as much as that's going to be a challenge, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy, they still have to guard LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And all those big guys, they can't keep up with Anthony Davis's athleticism. Ty is in L.A. Ty, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up? Hello? Oh, we lost you, Ty. Sorry about that. DeAndre in Inglewood. DeAndre!
Yes, I'm here. George, what's going on?
Hey, man.
So, I have minimal concern for the Lakers. I don't know what Lakers fans are calling you, complaining and concerned. It's just a bad shooting. They're having bad shooting games. That's pretty much that's all it is. They're playing good defense. Danny Green's shooting bad, but I don't expect that to be the main focal point. He will turn it around. He has in the finals. When big games come up, Danny Green does his big shots. LeBron will be LeBron. AD will be AD. I'm not concerned at all. I'm with you, George, on this one.
All right, DeAndre, thank you, buddy. Stay healthy, stay safe. This show is brought to you by our friends at Progressive Insurance and all our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. DeAndre drops off. We got KB back. KB, go ahead, buddy. Finish up, man. I'm sorry that you dropped off.
Hey, no problem, guys. How y'all guys doing?
Hey, all good.
Hey, real good. What I wanted to chime in on is, like you've been saying all this program about the fact that they're in the bubble, the fact that, you know, there's only been four games. They only got eight games. These are all tune-up games. These are all tune-up games for the top five. Really, I look at it as this. These eight games is to figure out who's the lower half of the seed is going to be. Everybody knows from the top down who's going to be, you know, on the starting rotation, who's going to get the minutes. It's a rhythm game. The Lakers, with Danny Green and KCP, they're rhythm shooters. With these eight games coming up, with the rest of the season coming up, going into playoffs, this is an opportunity for them to get their rhythm back. Because in regular season games, it's nothing like practices. Practices, you probably could knock down 10 out of 11 when there's nobody guarding. But in the game, it's a little bit more intense. It's a little bit more energy involved. And on top of that, you're getting used to your environment. You know what I'm saying? All this testing going on. You got other things that's going on outside of basketball. It could be focused on. Once they get in tune, when the playoffs come in, they're going to be more focused. They're going to get more locked in, and you're going to see a more competitive team from the top in the top five. That's my take.
Thank you, KB. Appreciate that. That was excellent analysis, and I'm with you wholeheartedly. 877-710-ESPN. Charles in Santa Clarita. Charles, what do you got?
Hey, George, how you doing?
Hey, man. Are you okay, by the way? You and everyone okay up there with the fires?
Yeah, they put them out pretty much. I'm staying away from people. The thing I called about is that LeBron James is one of the greatest basketball players that we've ever seen in his lifetime. I'm a 64-year-old man, and I've seen some of the greatest. I saw West play. I saw Magic play. I saw Wilt and Chamberlain and Kareem all play. No all-star team is going to be able to beat LeBron James in seven games four times. They may win two. They may win three. But they're not going to win four times. Thanks for taking my call. You guys stay safe.
All right, man. You too, Charles. Take care. Stay safe. Stay healthy. All right. 877-710-ESPN. Here's the deal. You want to call in, that's fine. We could talk Lakers with you in one more segment. But we're going to take a break. We'll take more of your calls. I also have a couple of questions for you about the bubble. I want to pose some questions to you specifically about the bubble, Greg Bergman and Laura. And I've got some interesting NFL news. The Athletic ranked all the NFL teams on offense from 1 to 32. Where are the Rams? Where are the Raiders? And where are the Chargers? I'll tell you next. Sedano Show with you here at 710 ESPN. Don't forget to listen to ESPN Audio at Home via your smart speaker. ESPN Audio at Home brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes, from customization to service to financial assistance. Mercedes-Benz vans are ready for anything. And download the Overheard podcast for curiously delightful conversations overheard around National Geographic's headquarters, presented by GEICO. 15 minutes can save you 15% or more on car insurance. So there you have it. So the Lakers will not have LeBron today. That is a done deal. He is sitting out. AD will likely play. He is probable for tonight's particular contest. Lord, do we have a winner? Okay, cool. So congratulations to our winner of the $100 gift card. Who? Oh, congratulations, Jeff, from Mission Viejo. There you go. So there you go. So we've got that. Real quick, Greg. So, Laura, can you find me some NFL music real quick? I know there may be people want to chime in, and there may be people that want to still have the Laker discussion with us, and you can at 877-710-ESPN. But The Athletic, Greg Bergman, has ranked every NFL offense from 1 to 32 going into the 2020 season. I will give you a guess at who number one is.
So obviously the Oakland Raiders, or sorry, the Las Vegas Raiders.
It's obviously not the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm going to say the Baltimore Ravens.
No, they're number two.
Ooh, so then it's
Chiefs.
Yep.
Yeah, Chiefs. So those are the two. New Orleans, three. Dallas Cowboys, four.
No,
Seattle
please.
Seahawks, five. That's the top five. The Rams division, though, packed with top 10 offenses this year. You've got Seattle at five, Niners at six, and we already know they have arguably the best defense. And then the Arizona Cardinals at number seven this year. They're expecting big things from Kyler Murray and big things from Cliff Kingsbury, the Athletic is. Do you want to take a guess where the Rams rank on this offense list?
Well, with not much of a running game and Jared Goff having question marks, I'm going to say 18.
You're close. It's 19th. I would also say that is unfair not to expect much from the running game. I actually think that Sean McVay taking a page out of Kyle Shanahan's book and going running back by committee, I think will pay dividends. And I think will be tougher for defenses to stop because they're not going to be able to stay. In other words, there are going to be so many different guys coming in and out of there. They're never going to be able to catch up in that regard to what the different skill sets are. There's going to have to be a lot of substituting on defense when you play the Rams because they're going to have so many guys in and out of that running back position. So I actually think I am, much like I am sold on the Lakers and buying their Lakers stock up, the people that are selling it, I am buying Rams stock. I think the Rams are going to be better than people think. I know that most people have them at like 7 or 8 wins. I have them closer to 10 wins. I think they're going to be a surprise team this year.
Wow, that's pretty good. I mean, going by the media perspective, that's why I put them at 18. But yeah, I think they're going to be better than what most media members put them at. I think they're not going to be last in the division like I bet most people have, with you saying that Arizona's a top 7 offense. I mean,
they've got
much.
The makeup of it, right? Like, don't forget, they added DeAndre Hopkins, right, to Kyler Murray, and they have Kenyon Drake, who's a good running back. You know what I mean? Like, they've got guys who can play. Let's see. The Los Angeles Chargers. Let me scroll here.
Yeah. Keep scrolling. Keep scrolling.
Where do you guess they are?
25.
Lower.
Oh, good. 32.
No. 28.
All right. Hey, not that far off. Just saying.
Last year they were 12th. I actually feel that's a little low. I know that they're going to try to win games on defense and run the ball, but I think they're good. They've upgraded their offensive line, trading for Trey Turner and signing Brian Bulaga. I think Tyrod Taylor is a good game manager, and if their running game and defense is as good as it's supposed to be, they're going to be right in the thick of things. Like, I don't think it's going to be – like, it's not going to be some explosive offense. It's going to be boring, but it may be able to get them wins.
3-win team.
Oh, stop that. 3 wins.
Look, San Diego is they're just not – they're not worthy of even being in this list.
Did
they're
you call 35th. Them San Diego?
Yeah, that's who they are. They're the San Diego Chargers.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think they're going to be that bad. I actually think they're going to be around the 500 squad. I could see them pushing like 9 wins too. So, and then the Las Vegas Raiders, Greg Bergman, where does the Athletic have your Las Vegas Raiders ranked on offense?
You didn't put them 1 through 7, so then they're obviously 8.
They're number 10, actually.
Okay.
They are number 10.
They are
good offense. Look, the Raiders added some explosiveness, right? Henry Ruggs III in the first round. That you would think will help Derek Carr's average in regards to the way the passes have traveled in the air. It was just 6.3 yards past the line of scrimmage last year, which ranked 38th in the league last year among quarterbacks. So they've got, you know, their offensive line intact. Everybody's healthy. I like their tight end. What's his name? Waller, right? Darren Waller.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
Josh Jacobs is a stud, I think. Maybe they found kind of what's the guy's name that used to play for the Patriots? Wes Welker and Hunter Renfro, right? A little shifty slot receiver. You know.
They have a good offensive line. Yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned that. They bring back everybody. Yep. Did you just not hear me say that 10 seconds ago?
I'm just agreeing.
Okay, yeah. And look, Gruden is an offensive guy. Like, offense wasn't their problem last year.
No, defense isn't all that bad either. They have a great defensive end in Max Crosby, who's been very disruptive in the backfield. So I think their defense is going to be much better than people think, too.
This secondary kind of isn't so great.
Secondary has some issues, but the main core in the middle is going to be good. So I think that, you know, I see 10 wins.
10 wins?
Yeah, 10 wins. Absolutely.
Are you serious?
I know you want to call me Raider boy.
You're not playing this up, right? This isn't a bit.
No, absolutely not. They have a very good offense. They have a very good defense, and they're playing against in the division a bad.
I mean, they
have a
very good defense. I feel like is overstating.
It's a good defense. It's a good defense. They're not a poor defense. They're not.
I would say they are above average defense.
Okay, fine. Fine. Above average is good. So you have a good.
I mean, no, that's not good. That's like just below good, actually.
Well, no, above average, whatever.
Above average is like a C+. That's not good.
I mean, anything with a C is average, so you're putting them in the B range at that point.
No, it's C+.
It doesn't matter. Semantics. You're still having they're a good team. They're going to be able to outscore teams. And also, I don't believe in Denver yet. I don't think that they're ready to go.
No, but their defense will be good.
Yes, they'll be fine, but they're going to outscore teams, and they built it so that they're going to have a chance against the Kansas City Chiefs, where they're able to throw against them.
Look, so I think the two toughest divisions are the West, both West divisions, like are unbelievably tough. But I'm with you; they're better than Denver.
Yep, and they're better than the Chargers. So you're
I mean, maybe
second,
maybe, maybe
yes, they're better than the Chargers.
Maybe.
I personally believe they're better than the Chargers, and if you are second in that division, you're looking at around 10 wins.
What do you mean? You don't know that? Like, who says that? Like, is that like indoctrinated that if you get around 10 wins?
Once they get going, if they start winning games that maybe last year they probably shouldn't have won, that they've grown and are much better this year, they're going to be 10 wins is very doable for this team.
All right. Laura just called you Raider boy, right, Laura? You just feel like he's being overly
Raider boy.
What's your team, Laura? Are you a
Charger
fan?
I don't even know what your team is, Laura. Do you have a football team?
I don't. I just want a good game. Just give me a good game. And usually when they play against the Raiders, it's a good game because they get trashed anyways. But, you know.
But that's also because in L.A. you didn't have football for 20 years.
Yeah, no. But my dad's family are huge Raider fans. And then the other side is like huge Cowboy fans. So I could never really have a team because they would always be fighting. So I just, for the sport, I just want a good game.
Yeah, and there was no team here for 20 years. So, I mean, you know, I get it. There's probably a lot of people like Laura, Greg. Why did you?
Well, he's like, I just want a good, because you're going to come out here and call me Raider boy.
Because you are.
Well, you are Raider boy, though. Like, why are you trying to, like, act like you're not?
No, I'm happy being Raider boy, but don't come out here and make it as a shot if you don't actually have a team for yourself to have any type of say in it.
Well, okay, you're right. I don't have a team. So you're right about that. But if I would have a team, I would at least have a team that can win, like the Patriots, you know?
Front runner. Got it.
Well, at least I have taste. I want a winning team, not like a losing team. Okay, I'm about to. Let me stop. I can just hear the Lions call. This is a Raider town, so I'm
yes,
done.
It is.
I'm done, Greg.
Thank
you won. You.
You
won. I can give you this one.
That's a W. Thank you.
Man. I don't know why you get so offended, Greg.
Because it's fun. Sports talk. Look, we're talking about fun sports things that are rigged. You get passionate about your teams, passionate about your fandom. This is what it's all about.
I mean, but it's look, you Raider fans, you do this every year. I mean, for the love of God.
16-0 every year, George. They have been 16-0 for my entire lifetime.
I can't wait.
John Ireland knows it.
I can't wait till LZ comes aboard and starts enjoying like making fun of you too.
Oh, this all this station is just different people making fun of Greg Bergman. It's just how it goes.
It's gonna be great. He's gonna fit right in. Like it's gonna be great.
I want him on my side. Can I have somebody on my side? Just one person. Just
it's
one.
Really not as fun that way.
I know, but like, there's gotta be somebody. It can't
no,
just be
because
by
you
my,
are
on my
you
island
are a,
by myself.
You are the black sheep of the family. It's okay.
Fine, I'll play into it as much as I can.
No, you don't have to play into it. You just do it, naturally. That's the best part of it. You know? So, all right.
I mean, even Momo's not on my side. I always thought Momo was on my side, and she's not.
No.
And
she's like the nicest person we have on the show.
Exactly.
All right, we're done here. Thanks to Clinton Yates. Thanks to Greg and Laura. Thanks to you guys for tuning in, calling in. Stay healthy. Stay safe. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. See you.